The Uhuru Radio Network being broadcast and simulcast around the world, including on WMXP 95.5 FM in Greenville, South Carolina. Lolly, speaking to you from the not so great white north here in Toronto, Canada, and we have an action-packed show for you today. Very good show. We think you're going to enjoy it. We're going to be speaking with Rupert Lewis. We're going to be speaking with L. Jones, and we're going to do a tribute to the late, great Yusuf Lateef. And Rupert Lewis will discuss the events that took place in 2013 in Jamaica and the Caribbean. And Mr. Lewis has written extensively on the work of Marcus Garvey, with special emphasis on his activities in Jamaica and the Caribbean. And his most recent publication focuses on the life and political thought of Walter Rodney. His other publication is Garvey, His Work and Impact. We will also interview Halifax, Nova Scotia-based poet laureate, teacher, and spoken word artist L. Jones. And L. Jones is currently the artistic director of Word is Bond, which is a spoken word artist collective. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can do the email thing. You can check us at dj@uhururadio.com. The Skype option is merely Uhuru Radio. And the North American phone number is 727-565-1599. And if you're calling from the United Kingdom or Great Britain, you can phone, or I should say not so Great Britain, 020-8133-6629. And we would like to thank O'Malley Ishitella and Archie Shepp. Chairman O'Malley Ishitella gave us the space to do diasporic music, and Archie Shepp gave us the concept of diasporic music. Music made in the West, but not of the West, and we continue. And during this first half an hour, we're paying tribute to those people that have passed away in 2013. We open up with Junior Mervin out of Jamaica, and he did a great song called Police and Thieves. And we're going to be paying tribute to those people that... Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from the not-so-great White North here in Toronto, Canada. And the news is the weather in Toronto and I guess in many parts of the East Coast of the United States and even in the southern parts of the United States. It is... Well, weather is an issue. And we kick the show off today with Haiti I'm Sorry by David Rutter. And David Rutter is from Trinidad and Tobago, and I believe he now resides here in Toronto, Canada. And I remember meeting Mr. Rutter on the streets of Toronto and actually taking him to the place he was looking for. But that's neither here nor there. We have a very action-packed show for you today. We are going to be playing some music about Haiti in the first half an hour. You know, we are commemorating the Haitian Revolution. The Haitian people broke the yoke of slavery in 1804. January 1st, they became independent. And we're paying tribute to Haiti through music. At 2:30, we're going to be speaking with Glenn Ford, and we're going to be talking about looking back at 2013. And I would like to thank Chairman Omali Ishitela, Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, for giving me the space to do diasporic music on Uhuru Radio. And I would also like to thank Brother Archie Shepp for giving me the concept of diasporic music, music made in the West, but not of the West. If you want to get a hold of us, you can do the email thing. That's dj@uhururadio.com. The Skype option is Uhuru Radio. The phone number in North America is 727-565-1599. If you're calling from the UK, you can call 020-8133-6629. But we're going to continue with the music of Brother Charles Mingus, and he did this song in 1957. This is called the Haitian Fight Song. Uhuru, you are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we were listening to Charles Mingus, and he was doing a song called The Haitian Fight Song, a song that he put together in 1957. And Charles Mingus was born in Arizona, but he grew up in Watts, California. He went to Jordan High School, which was in the heart of Watts, and a very conscious man. I'm looking at a book called Myself, When I'm Real, The Life and Music of Charles Mingus by Gene Santoro. And Mingus wrote his own book, Underneath the Underdog. There's also films that Mingus did of himself, so definitely check out Mr. Charles Mingus. We are paying tribute to Haiti, which became independent on January 1st, 1804. I believe the Sudan became independent on January 1st, the next century. And the Sudan is a mess right now. The imperialists have managed to split the country, and the Zionists and others, Colin Powell and people like that, are really happy about that particular split up. And time will tell what's going to happen. And we are paying tribute to Haiti, and now we wanted to play the music of Muta Baruka. Muta Baruka is from, I think Muta Baruka is from Raytown, I believe. I might be wrong, in Kingston, Jamaica. But Muta Baruka, the melanin man, is going to talk about Haiti.
And no one seemed to care. Haiti, you're going, neighbors beware. The poverty and death that haunts every day. The boat that leaves to the USA. You're paying for the Africanness you still keep. You're paying, bookman is not asleep. You gave us Haiti the strength to fight. Black people in the Caribbean, I say unite. Break the chains that keep us apart. Haiti suffers because it made a start. Haiti, Haiti, you have the will. Haiti, Haiti, Africa calls you still. Too black, too strong, you have to pay. Blacker than night, never seen the day. But too black is always the reason for your pain. But your fight for freedom will not be in vain. Haiti, you're going and no one seemed to care. Haiti now, but neighbors beware. The blood, sweat and tears that is shed today will be a guide for Africans along the way. Cuba beware. Jamaica beware. Trinidad beware. Grenada, beware. Caribbean, beware, beware, beware. Care no fear. Care no fear. Caribbean, beware, beware, beware. Break the chains that keep us apart. Haiti suffers because it made a start. But too black is no reason for pain. The blood for freedom will always stain. Haiti, Haiti, you have the will. Haiti, Haiti, Haitian leaders, what are you going to do? Today it's Haiti, tomorrow it's you. Today it's Haiti, tomorrow it's you.
Haiti ou pralé, et personne pas mêlé. C'est Haiti kounia, mes voisins, pétez sous pinganou. Sans sien, ak l'âme n'a pas crié jeudi, hein? A toujours guidé l'Afrique africain. Cuba, rete sous pingao. Jamaïque, rete sous pingao. Trinidad, rete sous pingao. Grenade, rete sous pingao. Caraïbes, rete sous pingane. Caraïbes, rete sous pingane. Cassé chien qui a fait séparer nous. Haïti, ou a fait souffrir. Peut-être tous ces premiers, mais trop noué, pas raison pour nous souffrir. Max sans liberté a toujours été là. Haïti, Haïti ou bien volonté. Haïti, Haïti, l'Afrique a pérélé ou toujours. Ni des Caraïbes, ça n'a pas fait. Je dis à c'est Haïti, demain c'est nous-mêmes. Je dis à c'est Haïti, demain c'est nous-mêmes. Je dis à c'est Haïti, demain c'est nous-mêmes. Demain c'est nous-mêmes. Demain c'est
are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada. And we will play in the music of Muta Baruka's song called Haiti. And joining us on the line is Glenn Ford, the executive editor of Black Agenda Report and a leading member of the Black is Back Coalition, and a man who has done radio, television, and a lot of good print media. So, Mr. Ford, how are you doing today?
Oh, real glad that you invited me on. Thanks.
Now, today is not January 1st, but January 1st is the day that in 1804 was the day that the people of Haiti conducted or had the first successful slave revolution where they came to power. In places like Jamaica, we had rebellion after rebellion after rebellion, and I think black people took power in Brazil, Paul Morris, for many years. But the Haitian people have, they won, and they have been being punished ever since. But how do you see the Haitian Revolution in 2014?
Well, let's harken back to the Haitian Revolution in 1804. We can see in the U.S. and European treatment of Haiti many echoes of the past that really resonate today in terms of the behavior of imperialism in the 21st century. For example, Haiti was reduced in the 1820s by the pressures of not just France, but the United States and a unified white world into paying an indemnity to France, basically to indemnify the French slaveholders for losing their property, in such a way that the debt was not paid until the 1940s. And this put Haiti into a permanent state of indebtedness, of penury, of inability to develop sufficiently in internally that really became a kind of general World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund, European and American developed country policy for the whole of the so-called Third World in the 80s and 90s. That is putting all of the world, which the Americans and the Europeans had super exploited in order to become rich, putting them nominally in debt to the same countries that had exploited them. We see that kind of beginning of an imperial policy with Haiti in the 1820s. Haiti, for example, also was not allowed to have a navy, not only not allowed to have a military navy, but even to fly ships under its own flag, and under a policy that was recognized by most of Europe and by the United States, any ship under Haitian flag on the high seas, the captain of that ship was liable to be hung on the spot as if he were a pirate just because he flew the Haitian flag. So Haiti was made into a kind of outlaw state, a kind of which was subject to international sanctions of the kind that we now see the United States using as a weapon against Iran and a host of other countries that it wants to bring to their economic knees. But those kinds of policies of isolation, of enforced indebtedness, of declaring a country basically an outlaw state, all of those things were tried in the 1800s, applied in the 1800s against Haiti. So Haiti makes history not only as the first black republic and the first successful slave rebellion, but also as probably the first target of the imperial world for the kinds of sanctions that we recognize in the present.
Now, Elombe Breath, a good friend of mine who's still in the land of the living, fortunately, used to always talk about January 1st also being the date of the independence of the Sudan. I think it was 1954, but the Sudanese situation in 2014 is a mess. What are your thoughts on that situation as we speak?
Well, let's remember how the South Sudan came into being as an independent country. It was after many decades of what has been described as civil war, but it is recognized by all honest historians and observers that Israel and the United States had been fomenting the dissolution of Sudan, which had been in geographically Africa's largest country since the 1960s. This was especially a project of Israel. Sudan was seen, it was a member of course of the Arab League, was seen as possibly Israel's most implacable potential foe in Africa. And so the undermining of Sudan as a unified state was a special project of the Israelis and, of course, therefore of the United States. So the South Sudan, the millions of people who died in the fighting that was fueled by the U.S. and Israel, has to be seen in its historical context. The south of Sudan, now an independent country, is a place of great oil wealth. Although the oil although South Sudan is landlocked, and the for the oil to be put on the market, it has to go through pipelines that go through the north. And for a very long time, the South Sudanese refused to pump the oil through the north because of a dispute over a sharing of the profits, that is, the North wanting to charge a fee for pipelines, but actually that would be a sharing in the profits, since they had developed the oil fields as a single country, and therefore the North was invested in the oil fields just as the South was, although the fields are located in the South. And I don't believe that could have happened, that the South would have withheld the oil and deprived itself of needed funds in the basically the first years of its existence, without the United States trying to create or exacerbate a crisis for the northern for Sudan, that is the northern part of the country, which the United States still considers to be at the top of its enemies list. So the carnage, the violence, the disarray in South Sudan must be seen as a product of U.S. and secondarily Israeli foreign policy, because the existence of that country is largely a product of those two countries' foreign policy.
Are you listening to Diaspora Music on Uhuru Radio? I am speaking with Glenn Ford, the executive editor of the Black Agenda report. Now, the Sudan, I wanted to deal with one other question about the Sudan, and it applies to a lot of Africa and a lot of the Arab world. Now, in the Sudan, they wiped out central committees. I mean, they were very harsh on leftists, Marxists, labor unions. Could you talk about, at one point, I think they, well, I know in Cameroon they used to wipe out central committees, but similar things took place in the Sudan. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, all over the Arab and Muslim world and the Arabized African world, the left has many times over been wiped out. In fact, there is not a country in the Arab world in which the left has not been eviscerated and demonstrated, decimated rather, many times over. This is part of the problem of the Arab world, that there does not survive a left that we would recognize as such. And in the absence of a viable left, since they've all been executed, you have a rise of jihadists. And the jihadists, although politically reactionary in almost every sense of the word, do have a politics that speaks to a kind of Muslim or Arab nationalism, and therefore anti-imperial sentiments among the public are often expressed through the language of jihad, sentiments that in previous eras, before the decimation of the left, would be expressed through leftist political language, but that avenue was largely eliminated by force. And in most of the Arab world, and also in Sudan.
This is in January of 2014, but I wanted you to go back and look at 2013. What do you think the most significant stories were for nationally and internationally? Or did I cut you off?
No. I was going to add that the United States is now mobilizing its hitmen of Africa to basically occupy the South Sudan and bring that country more reliably into the U.S. Orbit. And those countries are Ethiopia, Uganda, I believe Rwanda will probably jump into the fray as well, because they're part of the U.S. hit team. And now Kenya, which since having joined in the war against Somalia, is now part of the U.S. Hit parade, that is, the hitmen nations that the United States buys to do its bidding in Africa. So that will be that the resolution of choice for the United States in response to the disarray in South Sudan, occupation by the U.S. allies, by its clients, by its proxies, the Ugandans, the Ethiopians, and the Kenyans, and possibly the Rwandans as well.
So the hit parade is not just Beyonce and Drake. It's
no, it's the hit men that the United States employs in Africa.
I got you. Now, the most significant stories of 2013, nationally and internationally, in the view of Glenn Ford.
No, I agree with what seems to be the consensus, and that is Edward Snowden and the revelations of the vastness, the infinite U.S. Intention and capability for spying on not just, on everyone in the world, not just spying on American citizens who are close at hand, but spying on 60 million Spanish citizens. What the hell is that for? This is a huge wake-up call to the whole world, and I think that it's not just the story of 2013, but the revelations are so profoundly jarring to the human consciousness that this imperial state wants to know everything about everybody on the planet and the ramifications of that. That it's a story that unfolds in terms of the growing human consciousness of it into 2014 and 2015. It actually, I believe, will force the world to look with new eyes at U.S. imperialism and the monster that it has become. I don't think that folks are really coming to grips yet, but they will, with the real meaning of social mapping, that is, mapping of human relationships and what that means. The only way that gathering of metadata, that is, gathering of data on all of a population, on all Americans, on all Spaniards, on all Russians that have electronic devices that can be bugged, the only way that this is a rational thing to do is if everyone in the targeted society is given a weight, a value in terms of their potential threat to the state. Otherwise, it makes no sense. Otherwise, all of this information is garbage. It does not make sense to figure out what Norman Richmond's circles and networks of friends and contacts and associates and interlocutors is, and how your network interacts with everybody else's network. It does not make sense to do that unless you are grading and coding and giving the equivalent and, in fact, the actuality of a number and putting you into groups of other people with like values of threat to the state. Otherwise, it's garbage. It's not worth billions of dollars. It's not worth the political fallout that the revelations create. So everybody's being graded by the United States intelligence agencies, by specifically the NSA, as to their potential threat level to the United States, the threat level of the groupings that the NSA computers assign them to. You may be assigned to some groups that you're not even that you don't even know exist, Norman, that actually only exist statistically as a construct of the machines that have mapped your relationship with the rest of the universe of human beings.
Right.
You may not even understand where you are in that universe or where they put you. You know, this is mind-boggling stuff, and having been with this genie out of the bottle, it doesn't go back in, and people will continue to ponder it, and the end product of that pondering, of those ruminations over what is the meaning of the existence of this infernal machine, has to be disastrous politically for U.S. Empire.
Now, what does that mean for the everyday Johnny and Muhammad in terms of social media? Some people are saying that, you know, we should stay off of social media because we're giving information to the other side.
But the revelations show that it's way beyond that. It's not social media. There, if you are on any kind of electronic devices, if you use telephone, you mm-hmm. will still be mapped. You will still have your position assigned and your threat level assessed by the United States government and its infernal machines. The consciousness that I'm talking about is this: that once it is understood by the general public, by that everyone is considered a potential enemy by this state, the logical and normal human reaction, once this is understood, is to think of the state as the enemy. If someone is treating you as an enemy, your response is to view that someone, that in this case the state, the United States, as an enemy, because it's treating you as an enemy. That is a world changer, a sea change that is inevitable with these revelations. That is the logic. That is the human logic of it, the inevitability of folks en masse as this dawns on people, the real nature of the NSA project, that their response will be a whole new level of hostility to the U.S. empire.
I'm speaking with Glenn Ford. I wanted to know your thoughts on Black Agenda Radio and Black Agenda TV, not your thoughts, but what plans do you have for 2014 in terms of expanding the two entities?
Well, we have reason to believe that 2014 is going to be a good year for us. This kind of project that we're in, I almost called it a business, but it's not. It's a political project, is an incremental one. And every year that you stay out there, that you succeed in simply surviving, makes you stronger, makes you more authoritative. But mostly because we are almost always right in what we have said about this administration, every year we get more moral authority. The authority that comes from having called it, and our call turned out to be the right call. The authority that you get from doing good analysis, and we're proud of the analysis that we produce every week. We began this project because there was such a gaping hole in political analysis in Black America, that folk seem to be content with just stating their political beliefs, but very little was being done in terms of analysis of what the political realities are, and therefore folks' politics were not necessarily informed by facts well organized. We think that we've done as good a job as we could with the very limited resources that we have in filling that gap. And the longer we stay out here, and the better our analysis is, and the more authority we get. And I guess that's how you count the worth of a project like this. That is, are we worth reading? Are we worth listening to? Are we right at least a reasonable amount of the time?
Well, let me ask you, I guess we have about 7 minutes left, but we are basically seeing a lot of revisionist history now. Henry Louis Gates was on talking about criticizing the Black Panther Party and bigging up Obama, and I think it's a brother by the name of Pernell Joseph. I haven't seen the book, but he's supposed to be... Beg your pardon?
Pernell Joseph, yeah.
Pernell Joseph, pardon me. Pernell Joseph. Pernell Joseph is supposed to be... Well, he has a book out. I don't know if it's out, but it's coming out on Kwame Ture. And I hear that he's rewriting history. Everybody is mainstreaming everybody. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, it's a kind of end of history, a construction of history that arranges it in such a way that everything that has happened to and that Black Americans have done has simply been leading up to the election of Barack Obama, as if that is the crowning glory of all of our history, and in a sense, the end of history. It's like the curtain kind of comes down and everybody's wiping their eyes. It's the kind of end of a movie, and that is in fact what is so dangerous about this kind of revisionist history. It's not just that it's absolutely and totally wrong and fraudulent, it's that it rings the curtain down on Black history. It says that the drama is over and this is the happy ending, even though in this supposedly happy ending we find Black folks being in the worst economic shape that we have been in many respects since the 1960s, and even earlier in some respects. So it really is not such a happy ending as they depict. But again, what is most damaging is that they attempt to bring our history to a halt, and it justifies thereby that class that Pernell Joseph and Gates represents, this class that wants nothing more than to be accepted by and play some small role the ruling circles of America. They want the curtain to come down on Black history because that means the curtain comes down on our struggle, Negroes in the street won't be making trouble for the folks like them who want to be comfortable in the white man's suites. That's the real the danger of their revisionism. When you deconstruct all of their tall tales, well, it's easy to show the fraudulence of their history. But what is harder to combat is the kind of mood that they create, in which it seems that they sing a song in which struggle is not only no longer necessary, but something distasteful and passé, and a mark of an era that not only cannot return but should not return. They sing a death song for our people.
And the song they used was Many Rivers to Cross, a Jimmy Cliff song, which is, I mean, it seemed like everybody is just trying to rewrite.
Yeah, but the real theme is ain't no stopping us now. And such.
And when you say us is them, right?
They're talking about that they're small little circles.
The Black Misleadership class, as you call them, right?
The Black Misleadership class. And Gates is so flush with money from the enemy, he doesn't even pretend to do real sociology or history anymore. In the last episode of his putrid series, he remarked to Ron Karenga, whatever his name is now, well, you know, that the Panther Party was overblown. Who cares about a couple of guys in berets? That's where he places the Black Panther Party in history. A couple
That's
of guys.
Joke.
In berets. This man is shameless, and totally bought and paid for, and we can see why Barack Obama and he are friends.
All right, sir. We'd like to bring you back at another time, but I really appreciate you coming on Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio, and we will definitely. It was nice seeing you in Toronto the other day, and. Hopefully you'll come back sooner than you did the last time. You were away for quite a while.
Yeah, I hope to be up there as soon as I can, and I really appreciate you giving us a half hour to talk today.
Thank you very much.
All right.
And we have been speaking with Glenn Ford, the executive editor of Black Agenda Report, and Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. Continue. You're listening to the Uhuru Radio Network being broadcast and simulcast around the world, including on WMXP 95.5 FM in Greenville, South Carolina.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from the not-so-great White North here in Toronto, Canada, Ontario, or Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And we just concluded a great interview with Glenn Ford, and go to Black Agenda Report and check out Glenn Ford's commentaries, and he has a weekly show with Nellie Bailey, a lot of great information. And we are in hour two of Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio, and we're going to be doing some duets, some kind of lovey-dovey stuff, but we're not going to get to the lovey-dovey stuff until after we play a reggae version of Young, Gifted, and Black by Bob Andy and Marcia Griffiths, one of the I-3s. This is Young, Gifted, and Black, Jamaican style.
truth. There were times when I look back and I am haunted by my youth.
Oh, but my joy of today is that we can all be proud to say to be young, if getting back is where it's at.
Are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond, speaking to you from Toronto, Canada, and we just heard Bob and Marcia doing Young, Gifted, and Black, a song that came from the pen of Nina Simone, and it was inspired by Lorraine Hansberry. And we're getting ready to go into our lovey-dovey section, and we're getting ready to listen to Bobby Womack and Altrina Grayson. Altrina Grayson from Cleveland, Bobby Womack from Cleveland, and this is from a Wilton Felder's album, and Wilton Felder is from Houston, Texas, but he was with the Jazz Crusaders, and the song is called No Matter How High I Get, I'll Still Be Looking Up to You. This is Bobby Womack and Altrina Grayson.
If you feel, see the side of me that they paid to see. But you get that free, baby. But you get the worst side of me. The things that I lost along the way took a whole lot out of me. I had become so blind that I've lost all reality.
Oh, I can't remember when they said you're through, but I never, never, never gave up on you. I seen you at your worst, but baby, didn't we make it through? But sometimes you make me feel, you make me feel so insecure.
You don't have to wait.
Get home from work, it's a win.
And we'll start all over where we were at.
what's on my mind?
Everything you do with a smile, darling.
And what I'll do, I'll go the last mile, yeah.
It's hard to keep a good love strong.
Well, I might get mad, but I'll surely come back home, yeah. I would never hurt you, no, darling.
Surely would never leave you, no, baby.
Gonna work it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Keep my love at home.
We can work it out.
Oh, we can work it out.
Nunga Def. Nunga Def is Wolof. I'd like to send that out to all my sisters and brothers from Senegal and the diaspora who speak Wolof. And this is the last hour of the show, and we were listening to the music of Donnie Ray and Miss Jody. And Donnie Ray, we've had Donnie Ray on one of our shows, not on Diasporic Music, on Uhuru Radio, but we had him on CKLN 88.1. But we have had Miss Jody on Uhuru Radio, and the song that they did was "I'm Gonna Keep My Love at Home," and that is on Echo Records in Memphis, Tennessee. We also heard "No Matter How High I Get, I'll Still Be Looking Up to You" by Bobby Womack and Altrina Grayson out of Cleveland, Ohio. We are going to listen to some music from a young man by the name of D'Angelo and Erykah Badu. I am a huge fan of both of these artists. I really like D'Angelo, and they are paying tribute to Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell, the late, great Marvin Gaye and the late, great Tammy Terrell, and the song is called "Your Precious Love."
Say, baby, won't you play that old song that we used to... Yes, that's the one.
That's that?
I love that.
Oh, this is coming up right here.
Yeah.
Every day, Cause there's so much, girl, that you love.
I'm sure the one you love.
Barragani. You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from the great white north here in Toronto, Canada, and we were listening to the music of The Temptations, and that set of Temptations featured the late Richard Street and Damon Harris, and Richard Street and Damon Harris both joined the Ancestors in 2013, and they did a song called Heavenly. I may not be the one you want, but I'm sure the one you need. That's Damon Harris's line. Damon Harris was out of Baltimore, Maryland. He had a lot of struggles with prostate cancer, and he was a very outspoken person. And I never met him. I was a Facebook friend of his, but I spoke to him on the phone on many occasions. He used to come on a show, Larry Cotton's show, on Monday night. He has an R&B show. I used to listen to him, and he had Damon Harris on quite a bit. And Richard Street from Detroit, one of the original Temptations. I mean, he started out with Otis Williams, and before there was a group of Temptations, and he was with the Temptations from 71 until 1993, and he was replaced by the great Theo Peoples, who went on to replace Levi Stubbs in the Four Tops. But right now, we wanted to take you to the continent of Africa, and we're going to bring you some music from Dougie Fresh.
Wow, man, bamay waja delo gale. Sama nit ni fi don nañ nema, buñu fi indale garabu garabu. Waye deglu malen ngir xamna ni liñ len sacc seen dara rek lañu mëna xam. Xam sa aada nak moy sa yoon bu leer. Nak bo bugge bari xam xam da ngay nango gestu. Man Dougie Fresh sen mbokk law be bi mo len di jotali
li. You know, when I left to go to Africa, people said, don't come back with no witchcraft on your head. I just left the common blank and kept my cool, because they only said what they was taught in school. Brainwash education of our nation, publicizing its crime to be behind time. Adequate excuse and all verbal abuse. Our history's a mystery, or what's the use? You know what I'm saying? So we're gonna kick it off like this. Now I took me a trip to Africa, a 7-hour flight from America. I got off the plane and what did I see? But some brothers and sisters who look like me. Warm greeting, hello highs, a lot of mosquitoes and a whole lot of flies. Young ones tried to persuade you to buy, to feed the family so no one died of hunger, shelter, clothes, and starvation. And in the ghetto it's the same situation. Over big water so far I roam, to find my way back home. To find my way back home. To find my way back home. Now bust it. Now I woke up at 2 in the afternoon, in the middle of December, which felt like June. I got on a bus, then all of us caught a boat as we listened to the jams we wrote. As the boat stayed afloat and we was close to shore, I seen an island, one I thought I seen before. I was gonna ask the guy, but I forgot his name, so I said it ain't nothing. All islands are the same. Shame, who's to blame for that inside shame? Then I found out Gory Island was the name. Aim was to proceed with the mystery of the hidden, forbidden history. Gory Island was the last place the slaves was bought before taken to America, sold and bought. I could feel it in the air when my feet touched land, to be the first rap group to rock Africans. Our distant brothers, great-great-grandmothers, to one another, it's you I salute, because a man without history is like a tree without roots. So I say now, I took me a trip to Africa, a 7-hour flight from America. I got off the plane and what did I see? But some brothers and sisters who look like me. Warm greeting, hello highs, a lot of mosquitoes and a whole lot of flies. Young ones try to persuade you to buy, to feed the family so no one dies of hunger, shelter, clothes, and starvation. And in the ghetto it's the same situation. Over big water so far I roam, to find my way back home. To find my way back home. To find my way back. To find my way back.
to find my way back home. It's like that.
Listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richmond, speaking to you from Southern Ontario, and we were listening to the music of Doug E. Fresh, Africa Going Back Home. And Doug E. Fresh was born in New York City. He is Bajan, has a Bajan background from Barbados, and going back to Africa, I think they claim Doug E. Fresh was the first African, pardon me, the first hip-hop artist to go to Africa. I always thought that Jimmy Cliff was the first reggae artist to go to the continent, but the first reggae artist to go to Africa was the System, having a junior senior moment. There was a sister who went to Africa. She was on Island Records. My Boy Lollipop, Millie Small, went to Africa first before Jimmy Cliff. Yeah, Jimmy Cliff spent a lot of time in Africa, but Doug E. Fresh went to Africa in I guess the 90s. And speaking of Africa, Randy Weston, who has been on Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. Randy Weston was on Diasporic Music on CKLN 88.1. He's also been on the radio at Radio Regent. He's coming to Toronto next Saturday, and he has a new CD out called The Roots of the Blues. It's Randy Weston and Billy Harper, and it is a beautiful CD. Randy Weston is playing piano, and Billy Harper is playing tenor saxophone. So it's two people, and it's a good CD. And Randy Weston influenced Dede Bridgewater. We are going to be listening to some music from Dede Bridgewater. Dede Bridgewater was born in Memphis, Tennessee, and she was influenced by Randy Weston. Randy Weston's African work influenced Dede Bridgewater, and Dede Bridgewater eventually went to Mali and recorded a beautiful, beautiful CD album, and there's actually the CD that I have. It was given to me by Ayuko Babu, the head of the Pan-African Film Festival, and the CD he gave me had a DVD, one of the most beautiful DVDs I've ever seen in my life, of her. Showed the country of Mali and her performing and interviews with her. But we're going to listen to Dede Bridgewater, something she did in 1974. This is a song called Afro Blue. And Afro Blue is a chestnut that was written by the Cuban Mongo Santa Maria. And the lyrics for Afro Blue were put together by Oscar Brown Jr. from Chicago. And Oscar Brown Jr.'s father, Oscar Brown Sr., created a movement called the 49th State Movement, and he was trying to create a independent state for African people in the United States. I don't know if he had a place where he wanted this state to take place, but he was definitely a self-determination man, and I believe his father was a real estate man. But we're going to listen to Dede Bridgewater and her rendition of Mongo Santa Maria and Oscar Brown Jr.'s Afro Blue.
Of daylight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, Afro blue. Elegant boy, beautiful girl, dancing for joy, delicate swirl. Shades of daylight, cocoa hue, rich as the night, Afro blue. Young lovers are face to face with undulating grace. They gently dance, then slip away to some secluded place. Shades of delight, cocoa hue, rich as a night, Afro blue. Thank you. whispering trees echo the sigh, passionate pleading to reply, shades of daylight, Coco, you rich as the night afro blue. Lovers in flight, upward they glide, first at the high, gently subside, shades of daylight, Coco, you rich as the night afro blue, afro blue. As my suffering fantasy assumes reality, until it seems it's not a dream, then you are you and me, shades of daylight, Coco, you
to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali, speaking to you from Toronto here in the not-so-great white north. We are listening to the music of D.D. Bridgewater. She did a song called Afro Blue, a song that was put together musically by Mongo Santa Maria from Cuba, and the lyrics were written by Oscar Brown Jr. from Chicago, the Windy City. D.D. Bridgewater was born in Memphis, Tennessee, and I think she is in, I know she's in the film The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. We had Eric Mercury on from Toronto, Canada. Eric Mercury was in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. In fact, Eric played the commissioner of basketball, and Eric Mercury has almost as much melanin as Wesley Snipes, so that was a real stretch. But D.D. Bridgewater was married to the trumpeter Cecil Bridgewater in the early 70s, and she moved to France, and she performed in Michigan during the 60s and toured the Soviet Union in 1969. With the University of Illinois' big band, she sang with Thad Jones, Mel Lewis Orchestra, and she appeared in the Broadway musical, The Wiz, and she did a beautiful, beautiful album from Mali, like I was saying. But we wanted to, first of all, I would like to thank Lisa Watson for teching today's show. We're not going off, but I wanted to make sure that I thank people, and I'd like to thank Glenn Ford for coming on today. And we had planned to have a young lady on from Toronto, but she's still in Grenada, so we'll try to pull that off next week. But we wanted to play a song called Song for My Father, which is from the pen of Horace Silver. And Horace Silver was born in the United States, but his ancestry is the Cape Verde Islands, and his father was born in the Cape Verde Islands. And Song for My Father, is a classic, a jazz classic, and Mr. Silvers is quite up there in age, and there was a rumor going around that he had joined the ancestors, but that is not true. He's still in the land of the living. But D.D. Bridgewater put his, I don't know who put the, who did the lyrics for a song for my father, but I'll get that information soon. But D.D. Bridgewater's rendition of Song for My Father is a classic, and this was recorded live. And this is D.D. Bridgewater with Horace Silver's Song for My Father.
A song for my father.
Dire Spork Music on Uhuru Radio. We were listening to the music of D.D. Bridgewater. We want you to stay tuned to Uhuru Radio and listen to Ron Bob Simple coming on a little bit later. Also, check out Maito, an African internationalism, or African international, pardon me, and also Reparations and Actions, and all the shows that are on Uhuru Radio. We Will Be Black next week. You can also hear us Saturdays from 10 to 1 on Radio Regent. You can go to www.radioregent.com, and we have a show called Saturday Morning Live on that particular station. But remember to definitely check out Ron Bob Simple coming up a little bit later. But we wanted to end with the music. Oh, before we end, we wanted to thank Lisa Watson. I'm thinking about William Watkins in Chicago, but Lisa Watson for teching today. We're going to end like we end every week with the music of John William Coltrane and Alan Eric Dolphy Jr., who is from Los Angeles, California, who was from Los Angeles, California. And this features the piano work of McCoy Tyner, the drums of Alvin Jones, and the bass work of the great, still in the land of the living, Reggie Workman. And this is The Spiritual. We will see you in the whirlwind.